America Weekend.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge.
I'm Christina Stoffa.
Our next guest spent 9 years in federal prison for a crime she herself did not commit. The crime was actually committed by her then husband. Her sentence was commuted by President Bill Clinton in 2000. She went on to found Can Do, an organization which brings attention to individuals serving harsh prison sentences. It is great to say hello to Amy Pova. Amy, welcome to the show.
Good morning. Thank you so much for having me.
Well, this is a fascinating story and one that really needs to be discussed. Let's start with what happened to you. How did you end up being sentenced to 24 years in a federal prison?
Well, what people still, even today, do not know is that around 1988, the conspiracy laws were broadened to drug crimes. And conspiracy is one of these laws that makes it very easy for a federal prosecutor to indict you if you further the conspiracy one step. That means you could have mailed a FedEx package. Somebody that got 10 years received a FedEx package because his wife said she was going to be out of town. Drug dealers a lot of the time don't want the paper trail coming to them, so they will often think, oh, my ex-husband, he's not involved in this, he won't get in trouble, and they'll, like what happened in this one particular case, ask, would you mind if a FedEx package comes to your house?
Mm-hmm.
And this one person said, no, they have children together, they were divorced, and after the FedEx package arrived, it didn't have drugs in it, it had money, SWAT descended on his place.
Wow.
And
wow.
A federal judge will even say ignorance is no excuse. In my case, I collected some bail money. My husband had been arrested in Germany. We were separated for a year. I did some stupid stuff. Not gonna. I'll admit that.
Mm-hmm.
He was manufacturing ecstasy, and I ran around and collected bail money for him, which he never received in Germany, and that sucked me into the conspiracy law.
Oh man!
Wow.
So is that why your sentence was so long?
Yeah, the other thing about conspiracy is that your time is calculated based on the total sum of drugs involved in the entire conspiracy. So everybody that did anything in the conspiracy, which is an organization, whoever goes to trial and is found guilty, they receive the full weight of the drugs. Back when I was prosecuted, that's how it was calculated.
Mm-hmm.
They've had some... they've altered it a little bit under a reasonable foreseeability clause, but back then I was held responsible for 3.3 million tablets that he had manufactured.
What?
He engineered a deal and got ultimately 3 years probation here in the U.S.
Are you kidding?
That's incredible.
So you did all the time and he got 3 years probation?
Yeah. See, people don't understand that tough on crime era. The way it shakes out is if you will enter into a plea bargain and cooperate. Cooperate does not mean just saying I'm guilty. Cooperation means you have to give substantial assistance, and that means you have to feed more people into the system. So a lot of the time, the people at the top, they always say they want to get to the people at the top, but it's not how it usually shakes out.
Mm-hmm.
Many ringleaders will go into a plea bargain, and they get the best deal because they have the most information.
Did anybody ever come to you at that time? Did prosecutors come to you and say, hey, Amy, you know, tell us this, tell us that, and we'll make sure they go easy on you? Was that opportunity ever given to you?
Yes.
And what happened?
Well, they I pulled into my house, pulled into the garage, and I was rushed. Guns were drawn, and they yanked me out of the car and took me into my home, which was at the mercy of about 10 people that were ransacking it. And again, my husband at that time lived in Dallas. I lived in L.A.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was kind of shocking. I was put into a chair. I was told I could not call an attorney. That seems to be...
Isn't that illegal?
Yeah, that's kind of wrong.
Yeah, I think there's an assumption that we still have that right, but I've heard over and over, even in Monica Lewinsky's book, which I read, they put her in a room and said she could not call her attorney. Anyway, I was told that they felt like I had information and that if I would work with them... they didn't offer me a deal. They just said I would be facing 20 to life if I did not work with them. So my I clammed up because I don't know if you can understand what being in a situation like that is. It's so shocking to see your home being absolutely destroyed that it's not something that you want to just sit there and start talking to the people who are destroying your home.
There's so much to process at one time because you've got cops all over you. You said they swarmed you with guns in your driveway, and then you're brought in to see, yes, your home being destroyed in front of your very eyes.
Yeah, it was crazy. I think I was just in shock. Sure.
So with everything that you just said, I'm reading this quote from Charlie Strauss, assistant U.S. attorney from Waco, Texas, who told Glamour magazine in 1999, had she come to the table at that time, cooperated, been truthful, honest, and candid, I would say there's a probability she wouldn't have been prosecuted. Is there any truth to that statement at all?
Yes, there is. I don't think that they even wanted to prosecute me. But what he doesn't say in there, and anybody who knows how drug cases are prosecuted, it's not about coming clean and just being honest. You have to, it's a mandate. In order to get a deal, you have to give substantial assistance. That's in the clause. And you don't get the fruits of a plea bargain or a deal unless you work with them. So I did have an attorney. My attorney ended up speaking with the prosecutor. My attorney sat me down and said, they want you to become a working informant. And he explained what a working informant was, he said, you don't get to dictate the deal. You do whatever they ask, and it could involve wearing a wire. They think that you're an asset. You will probably have to infiltrate your husband's organization because they think that, you know, you would be somebody that his organization would probably be willing to meet with. So I wasn't interested in anything like that.
And no kidding. Who would be?
Right. Either way, you're still surrendering your freedom if you're going to be sent to prison or if you're going to end up just working for them all the time.
And you're putting yourself in danger.
Exactly.
I mean, come on.
Right.
Yeah. And at that time, my attorney said that they had offered 5 to 7.
Now, let's get back to how your situation resolved itself. Then we're going to talk about modern clemency and the situation now. You are able to get your sentence commuted by President Clinton in 2000. How were you able to get the White House's attention concerning your own situation?
Well, I was very lucky. I grew up in Arkansas. And so what are the odds of having a president from Arkansas and a senator from your hometown, Senator Bumpers, who was governor before? Clinton was governor of Arkansas. They went way back. They were friends. And early on during Clinton's first term, we reached out to Senator Bumpers, and we were in the tough on crime era, and he actually said he could not get involved. He supported mandatory minimums and the drug laws, and so it was toward the end of Clinton's term, and the Glamour magazine article came out, which that was a game changer for me. Suddenly, politicians realized that the laws that they had handed the Department of Justice were not being applied the way they were intended. They weren't supposed to let kingpins go free and engineer a deal and put the wives in prison for 24 years based on all the drugs that a kingpin had either sold or manufactured. So there were a lot of politicians who were outraged, and nobody's ever going to read your case or look at your transcripts. It's too labor-intensive, but the Glamour magazine article did a good job of vetting my case and providing the details. So two senators from Arkansas, Senator Pryor and Senator Bumpers, but I got over 20 politicians who wrote letters supporting my clemency.
You are lucky because you only served 9 of the 24 years. Do you have an idea in terms of numbers as to how many people went through or are going through similar things that are still in federal prisons?
Oh, it's thousands. That's why it's a very busy time for me right now, because President Clinton has a clemency initiative, and he's trying to, I think, repair some of the damage that was done during the 90s when the train went way off the tracks. And we've identified so many people who are serving life who are first offenders. You have to understand, in the early 80s, first offender in a drug crime usually got probation. we went from a model where a first offender got probation to a first offender could receive life based on, like I said, the total sum of what happened in a conspiracy, even if they just did something very minor. And we have a lot of people who aren't very educated. Senator Tom Cotton from Arkansas, he says he doesn't believe there's anyone in federal prison who is serving a long sentence that doesn't have violence associated. Mm. I'm here to say I've looked at many cases. I serve time with a lot of women. We have a lot of pot lifers, a lot of people who are serving life for marijuana. And if you're going to make a statement like that, you really need to educate yourself.
Sure. Sure. All you have to do is call them up and say, hey, look at me. I went through it, you know. Amy, stay with us. We're coming up on a break. More with Amy Povach coming up. I'm Ed Kalenge, along with Christine Astafo. And this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.
America.
Welcome back to America Weekend. I'm Ed Kalenge along with Christine Astafo, and we continue our conversation with Amy Povach.
I've seen numbers that there are marijuana arrests in this country every 42 seconds.
Wow.
Tell
Correct.
Me, how much are we overreacting as a society because of this?
Well, it's heinous, and we should, as a human species, it's a testament that we really don't learn from history, and prohibition is a horrible failure, but especially with regard to marijuana. Do you want to work with your child and educate them, and maybe they're going to experiment with pot? A lot of young people do. Would you rather get a phone call and find out that they were in jail and then they're going to have a felony that follows them for the rest of their life with the current prohibition laws that we have? That's far worse. That's a far worse consequence, I believe, than your child probably experimenting with marijuana.
Do you feel that if it was legal, it wouldn't be such a... You know,
a
big deal.
It
wouldn't be a stigma, but also I feel like kids wouldn't be so like anxious to get their hands on it if it was a legal substance.
Oh yeah, I think that those numbers are pretty well fleshed out in Amsterdam. That's the case over there, and so. Yeah, I think a case can be made for that, absolutely.
Now, it looks as if we are evolving, to use that term. We see what's happened already in Colorado. We see what can happen in California. As states begin to modernize, again, to throw a term out there, and start to accept the idea that marijuana is part of the culture to a certain extent, how do you see the federal government reacting to this?
Well, there was a lot of backlash, even here in California, and I'm sorry to say, even under Obama's first term, it certainly has been better under his second term, but under the first term, not necessarily to blame him, but the DEA became very, very aggressive here in California and started doing something that had never been done before. They started going after landlords. So my husband actually owns real estate, commercial real estate. Mm-hmm. So if he were to allow somebody to open a dispensary, medical marijuana, which is perfectly legal, landlords started getting notices that they should evict the dispensary owners, which that you can't do that because there's a contract.
Right.
I mean, you have a lease. And so then the only university in the nation, Oaksterdam University, was raided. That was horrible. And so, it gets kind of dodgy. I think the DEA feels somewhat threatened over the idea of losing marijuana as the number one drug that they arrest most. Because, yes, over 700 people a year get arrested for marijuana.
I remember doing a story here on the show about a year ago about how people who operated dispensaries in Colorado were having a hard time opening bank accounts for their businesses. They would go in, oh, sorry, we can't open an account like that. Wait a minute. You can't turn people away. In the state, it's a legitimate business. So it's this weird dichotomy that's going to have to be addressed by the federal government, and it gets back to states' rights. A lot of the people that may be against legalization are the ones that'll claim, hey, you know, a state can do whatever they want. Well, if that's the case, a state can do whatever they want.
Exactly. Yes. Well, we need to remove marijuana from a Schedule 1 category because, and for people who don't know, under Nixon, the Controlled Substance Act came in, and Schedule 1 drugs are reserved for the most dangerous drugs, and the criteria states it can have no medicinal properties. So marijuana was wrongfully placed as a Schedule 1 drug way back then.
I have to ask you, though, before we go, you know, my mind goes in weird directions. I keep thinking about how Bill Clinton was the one that commuted your sentence. Did you at least maybe send him one of those, like, 1-800-Flowers thank you bouquets or something like that?
Actually, I wrote several letters thanking him, but I had an opportunity to thank him in person.
All right.
He was at the Democratic Convention in California, and we had a moment to where I was able to thank him personally.
That's better than one of those 1-800-Flowers thank you bouquets. So that's even better. You did it in person. All right. So now tell us where people can go online to learn more about the work that you do on this.
Yeah, well, I started the Can Do Foundation after I got out of prison. That's clemency for all nonviolent drug offenders, but we work hard to vet the cases and look at them, and we put those people up on the website, mostly focus on women, but also on people serving life for pot, and now also some men who are mostly serving life sentences. Yeah, Can Do Foundation, and there's, you know, some other organizations, but I would appreciate anybody who wants to educate themselves and to reach out to us.
And you can learn more about the Can Do organization. Their website is candoclemency.com.
Amy Povar, thank you so much for joining us here on America Weekend.
Thank you. I love your show.
Thank you. Stay with us. More to come. I'm Ed Kalecki.
I'm Christina Stoffel.
And this is America Weekend from the Envision Radio Network.
America Weekend.